ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? How you doing? No, Joel Blank is not here because he's chilling in Disney. And no, Jeremy Branham is not here because he is the voice of the Cougs. And Cougar baseball, well, he is traveling. He is going. Joe George on the other side of the glass, he is rocking the Houston apparel. Everything about this show right now is UH, all except for me. Although I do proudly wear my UH apparel. I'm not afraid to wear it. I do wear it. I like it, especially the really cool stuff. They send us those dry fit shirts. Those dry fit shirts are awesome. Thank you, Pam Kehoe.
The shirt I'm wearing now is definitely a gift from the Houston Cougars and Pam.
But Pam is awesome. I want to say thank you to her. Killer Bees, no bees today. I am advocating for both Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on the Killer Bees. Patrick Creighton with you. Joe George on the other side of the glass. At Pete Creighton 1, at Joe George Radio. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. On the John P. listener line, on the text line, on Twitter. On the Twitch channel, twitch.tv/ESPN975, ESPN975.com, ESPN975 app. And tell Google, tell Alexa, play ESPN975. Take us with you everywhere you go. You know you want to. Look, I hope you show this to Joel Jones. You got to show this. I took out the B. I took out the B. Now, there's no B here. There's no B's here. But I took out the B so that there can be some version of the B's on the B's.
I mean, you got to do what you got to do. We got to be represented, the B's. I'm still trying to figure out why we haven't changed the name of the show yet. Joe, Joel, Jeremy, the J's. Come on, guys. Include me here.
More J's than Jason Kidd.
I'm just like, what are we doing here? Like, include me in the fun. I'm not changing my last name.
The Bee Gees.
That could be dangerous.
Well, at least you're not dead.
That's true.
Oh, the B's G. Instead of the BGs, the B's G.
That's good, too.
But, yeah, you know, there is a modicum of disrespect, Joe George. There is a modicum of disrespect that for all the time and work and effort that you put onto the show, especially since, let's be fair, attendance is part of the grade, and your attendance higher than their attendance.
I know. I'm here. I'm here every day this week. I'm always here. They try to claim I'm not. I'm always here.
Maybe it should be the GBs.
Mm.
And put the guy who actually shows up first.
Mm. I think we're onto something here, pal.
That would be a little something. Now, I know I'm going to take you down a path here that you might be a little worried to go down. As the Astros looking to take this series from the Pirates, or as they call them in Pittsburgh, the Young Bucks. Trying to take this series from the Pirates with another afternoon game, or for us, a morning game. No score there in the top of the second. But let me ask you, yesterday's game, they didn't get a great start out of Christian Javier. They did not get a great appearance out of Ryan Pressly. The offense was very hit and miss. They had two homers and then a ninth inning rally. Otherwise, they didn't really do a whole lot offensively. So let's start with the biggest and most important thing on here. People are worried about various different players on the Astros, maybe because they've gotten off to a slow start, or they've gotten off to, they're not hitting as well, or not pitching as well. I'm not as concerned about the results in 11 games. I am concerned about how they're actually playing. Meaning, when a pitcher's velocity is down, that always opens an eye. You know, was it down for an inning? Was it down for a start? Or has it been down now for a little bit? And I'm wondering if it is time. I don't want to say high level of concern, but I think some level of concern is warranted with Christian Javier. If you remember when Javier first came up to the Astros, he would throw 92, 93. That's kind of why he wasn't really considered a big prospect. Didn't throw that hard. But Christian Javier over the last couple of years has actually added some giddy-up, and he's been throwing basically 95, occasionally ramping it up as far as 98, but consistently throwing about 95 miles an hour with the fastball. And he was not at 95 miles per hour with the fastball yesterday. And, you know, this is coming off a season where he threw about 55 innings more than he'd ever thrown previously in his career. Christian Javier yesterday throwing his fastball primarily 92 miles an hour. And much like Jose Urquidy, when you throw 92 miles an hour high in the zone, you better get it on top of the zone, because if you don't, they're going to get it 400 feet. And that happened a couple of times yesterday. Fastballs did not get as high in the zone as they needed to get, and they got blasted. But for Javier, who regularly works 94, 95, to throw 91, 93, and overwhelmingly 92 miles an hour, that was a little bit concerning for yesterday. And how far did that go? Well, he usually throws his slider 80 to 84. And yesterday, it was pretty much at 77 from the third inning on. Curveball's usually between 77 and 80, and yesterday it was, well, mostly 74 and 75. 2 miles an hour doesn't seem like a big difference. It's a big difference. Now, in the sixth inning, when he was a little bit of a jam, you know, he was able to kind of reach back and add an extra mile per hour, so he was getting the fastball up to like 94, like the very last two batters. But the fact that he had a velocity dip across the board gave me enough pause to go back and look and say, all right, well, what did Javier do in his last start, you know, at Minute Maid Park against the Tigers? And all his velocities were down. All right, let's go back to his first start. Against the White Sox, Minute Maid Park. What did he do in his first start? Well, in his first inning, fastball was 93-94, so really not enough down that you'd say, okay, there's a concern here. Because he was hitting 93 and 94 consistently, but by the second inning, he was down to 91. And he worked 92-93 most of the rest of the game. And if you remember, in the sixth inning, he threw two fastballs. One was 92 and one was 93, and both of them were smashed for doubles. That's when he was pulled. Javier is known for having a deceptive delivery and a high-riding fastball. When that high-riding fastball is coming at you 95 and you get a late look at it, you could get away with a little bit more at the top of the zone than you can when it's only coming 92. And they're not missing it when he is top of the zone. Not high, not above the zone, but just higher in the zone. Not all the way to the top where he likes to be. And he's getting hit. So his location's a little bit off. And his velocity is a little bit down. That's something, Joe, that is something that concerns me. I'm not as concerned about the results. I am a little concerned about the velocity being down.
Yeah, it's something that we all are going to have to keep an eye on and watch going forward, because if this is a trend for this season, it is a problem. And people can be upset about worries and concerns and that it's early in the season, and there's a lot of stuff that Astros fans, I think, are overreacting to, but this is something that's real. Like, his velocity is down. Christian Javier's arsenal of pitches is not very deep. So if he doesn't have that high fastball, he misses something from his game. But I think it's interesting is I think Javier can be an ace-level Cy Young level. I've got a ticket on Javier to win the Cy Young this year. Don't feel great right now. But Javier, what's interesting about this point in the season now is, can he adjust in a different way where if the fastball, if that speed isn't back right away, like, can he figure a way to still get guys out? Can he adjust his game? Can Can Josh Miller and the pitching staff, can they help him navigate through this hopeful short period of time? And at some point, it will return back to its full form. I would say I believe it's going to go back. We don't know for sure, but like I would think that his velocity will come back at some point. And this is what you talked about with all those innings last year, a very short spring training because he was pitching the World Baseball Classic, where he was nasty. I mean, he was peak Javier in the World Baseball Classic. I'm guessing the velocity was there because he was dominating everyone, it looked like. So it's not like panic button for Javier, but it is something that I think if it happens again, it's just another red flag that you're hoping is going to go away.
I think it's something to watch, right? Could he be going through a little bit of a dead arm period because of the WBC? You know, maybe he ramped up too hard. Now he's got a little bit of a dead arm. Okay, it's possible. You know, anytime you introduce the WBC into a pitcher, there's always random unknowns. So it could be that he's got a little bit of a dead arm right now and he's trying to pitch through it. It could be maybe he's got a little bit of tightness somewhere. Now it could be his shoulder, it could be his arm, it could be his back, it could be his leg, it could be anything. But is he pitching his way through some kind of minor injury that is impacting his velocity? Also possible. We know the Astros, they do not tell us bleep until he absolutely cannot pitch, and then it's discomfort.
Our favorite word.
So, always with the D word.
Discomfort's the best.
So, there are a lot of different reasons why he could have temporary velocity drop. It's something to monitor going forward, though, because of the fact he pitched, you know, 55 innings more than he's ever pitched before. He's still a young pitcher. Last year was the most he had started in the major league level. And, you know, this year he is going to be a full-time starter. They are counting on him to be a high-end starter, especially with Lance McCullers Jr. still sidelined. And as much as all the occasional report that comes out about Lance, I'm still not convinced we see him till May.
Dana Brown said that on the flagship on Sunday that it would be after Altuve. So doesn't that sound like June?
After Altuve?
Yeah.
That's a big drop. Because he went from he was going to be back late April to now he's going to be back in June?
Like, is that – like, or maybe – What's confusing about that, does it mean Altuve's return is earlier than we're anticipating?
No, Altuve's return is not. He's got a broken hand, a broken thumb.
Yeah.
There's no way to speed that up.
I think they're just playing it safe with Lance, honestly. I don't know. I know Jeremy loves the word soft. I don't use that for Lance McCullers.
How is he soft? He's injured.
Well, he does. I think of all the players, Lance does have some softer tendencies in terms of, like, if things aren't right, it seems to all go wrong for him. And I don't.
So you say mentally soft?
Yeah, sometimes. This injury, it just seems like they're playing really conservative for the second year in a row. That last year, he could have come back sooner, but they're playing uber extra conservative with Lance McCullers again. And June? Because, like, the one thing with Javier, how you can combat some of these velocity stuff is potentially Lance McCullers return and going to a six-man rotation. The nice thing about the Astros schedule, though, is that they don't play on a Thursday again until June 1st.
Yeah, that's something we've talked about before, about every Thursday they're off all through to June.
Yeah, so at least the Astros are not at the point in the season now where Javier is consistently pitching every 5 days. Because of that, that alleviates some of the strain on his arm. So the hope is that in the next two starts, we see the velocity go back up. We'll just wait and see.
And it's not unreasonable to think that it would be there. Now, it's funny that you said if Dana Brown said he won't be back till after Altuve, I would think that should be a bigger story than it is. Because I don't even see anything about that on Twitter at all. McCullers had said roughly a week ago, he was ahead of schedule and throwing from 90 feet and throwing on back-to-back days. So if he suddenly now is knocked you back until June, there had to be a huge setback.
I would disagree a little bit just because based on the timeline, like a typical spring training ramp up. I wouldn't that be, If he just started throwing, you know, 2-3 weeks ago on flat ground, you know, spring training is what, normally 2 months, that full ramp up? Well, and he's starting at from scratch.
Out of spring training, if you know, your first week or so, you're pretty much just throwing. And then you build up you're building up your pitch count and building up your stamina, that by the, say, third time that you take the ball, you're about ready to go 4 or 5 innings. And then the fourth time you take the ball, you go 5+. You know, I saw that, for example, first start of the year, guys were going 5 innings, maybe 6 innings, 80, 85 pitches. And then by the second start, they go 95 pitches. So it probably takes about 2 to 3 weeks to get from throwing to 70 pitches. And for where we are, that would be the first week of May. But man, I would really hope that they're not talking about McCullers until June again, because that does make you worry about, like, what is going on. How did he have another issue where now all of a sudden he's pushed back another month? I would hope that that's not actually the case, and Dana Brown's just either misspeaking or being ultra conservative, knowing that maybe it's not as bad as it is. I got more on your Astros coming up next. Patrick Crane in for Joel Blank, Jeremy Branham alongside Joe George. Killer Bees, ESPN 975.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joel and Jeremy are out. Joel is on vacation. Jeremy is off busy being the voice of the Cougs. By the way, Jeremy does a phenomenal job as a play-by-play broadcaster. If you have not ever had the chance to catch a game that Jeremy calls, Jeremy is a terrific broadcaster. He is one of the absolute best play-by-play guys. You're missing it. You definitely want to get in on that. Now, Astros have a 1-0 lead here early, bottom third. A double by Jose Abreu, Joe George.
I heard that guy stinks.
I heard he is horrible.
He just can't hit the ball. Terrible signing, bad contract. Jesus, the takes are bad with him.
Abreu, by the way, and look, he hasn't hit for a lot of power as yet, but he's hitting .288. And he's got a .339 on base, which isn't great, but isn't awful. Again, we're 12 games into the season, Joe. And as somebody who knows a little something about Chicago sports,
yep,
being you, Joe George, somebody knows a little something about Chicago sports and has maybe seen a little bit more of Jose Abreu than 99.999% of people in this city. Are you surprised that Jose Abreu is not blasting homers right out of the gate?
No, and there's a couple of reasons why. First of all, as I know Jeremy tries to paint me as a White Sox fan, I'm not. But I do love Jose Abreu. He's a great baseball player. And all you got to do is hit the Google machine. Okay, I'm going to help everyone out here, Pat. Just go to google.com. You're going to type in Jose Abreu slow starts. And I see I got an article from 2021, 2022, 2017, 2015. Oh, maybe Jose Abreu just starts slow. Like, that's just, he's Alex Bregman. Like, what, and what people don't realize is, yes, it's a big contract. You're expecting big things, but Jose Abreu is just a slow starter. It's what he's done multiple times in his career. Yes, the power numbers are down, but the extra base hits are still there. They were there last year. And that to me is where, in this lineup, it's not concerning. It's not anything about Jose Abreu, because you don't need him to be Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, Alex Bregman expectations with the home run ball. You need him to get on base and drive guys home. And Jose Abreu has shown that that's constantly what he does. And he's just a slow starter. You know, in 2021, he hit .202 his first 27 games of the season. He hit well north of .300 the next 45 games and still had a great season overall. So like he's and so it's not even like Alex with Bregman, where Bregman starts slow and sometimes he digs himself such a hole in his average that he's unable to overcome that. Jose Abreu is the opposite. His slow starts are shorter, and when he gets going, the hits just keep coming, and his average is still always close to 300 or above 300. So I just have – he's going to be totally fine.
I feel like Abreu – I think people – a lot of people in this city, I don't think they realize how great a player Abreu has been for his career. You know, look, he's been a Rookie of the Year. He's been an MVP. He's a three-time All-Star. But you look at his – just the overriding numbers. For his career, he's a .292 hitter with an .858 OPS. That says All-Star level. And he's driven in 100 runs or more – 6 times.
On awful baseball teams.
You know, I get it. Last year, he didn't have the 100 RBI, but the White Sox last year had so many injuries to their lineup. I mean, they really struggled to score runs because they just didn't have enough bats. But he did hit 40 doubles. That's a hard number to attain. In fact, he'd only hit 40 doubles once in his career prior to that. He hit 40 freaking doubles.
If he hits 40 doubles in this lineup, he's going to easily have 100 RBIs. With the guys that are in front of him and the guys that are going to be on base, if he gets you that, like that production this year, it's going to be awesome. We just saw it today. Like, I mean, I think it's funny. I really do think the reason why people are upset with the Jose Abreu signing is because they see that Yuli Gurriel is a home run this season.
A homer?
That Trey Mancini hit a homer last night.
Wait, a homer?
A homer. Well, but Jose Abreu is none, Pat.
Oh, my goodness. He hasn't hit a homer.
Yeah.
I tell you, you look at Abreu's season last year. 304, 378 on base, 824 OPS. 15 homers, 40 doubles. Like you said, if he does that in this lineup, that's 100 ribs. Are you telling me you wouldn't sign up for your first baseman to hit 304 with 15 homers, 40 doubles, and 100 ribs? Because I absolutely would.
That'd be awesome.
You know who you'd like to see over the course of a full season hit 300 with maybe 10 to 12 homers and 40 doubles? Michael Brantley. So if you all love Michael Brantley, probably love Jose Abreu. We just haven't seemed to bridge that gap yet because, well, Joe, in 12 games, of which a whole season is made, in 12 games, well, he doesn't have 5 homers. He stinks.
Bad contract.
They paid him so much money.
Yeah, should have kept 200 hitter Yuli Gurriel. This was one of the best free agency signings in baseball this year.
I don't get the... It really, this is something that I talk about on Late Hits a lot, is Astros fans be better than Yankees fans. Yankees fans panic game one. Right, every time they lose, they're pitching a fit. If you've ever seen Nicky Turturro's Twitter, if a pitcher gives up a run, he's pitching a fit. If they don't score a run, he's pitching a fit. If they lose, he loses his freaking mind. Don't be that person. Don't be that kind of fan.
It's here, though.
Don't be so spoiled by the fact the ALCS has been renamed the Astros Invitational. Don't be so spoiled that you expect 162-0 every year. That hitters can never make outs and pitchers can never give up runs. Otherwise, they suck.
I will say I kind of love it. I love the. I think there's some good in the angst.
You like the neurotic fan?
Yeah, I kind of. You know what, man? I just sometimes the city's too passive for me. You know, like the way people view the Rockets right now, like they don't matter. There's not a care in the world about this organization. Like I kind of like the fact that people are this engaged with a baseball season so early on, because they really could be. If we all want it to be, we could be checked out, because we all know the Astros are going to make the playoffs. We all know they're going to win the division. So like, people don't have to care about a slow start. So I get it, but I also kind of love it. I'm not going to lie. Has its perks.
I am a fan of the passionate baseball fan. I am not necessarily always a fan of the neurotic baseball fan, especially when your team has given you a recent history for you to not be neurotic. Like, for example, if the Astros were the Yankees, where they fail to meet expectations every year, and they've had some late season collapses, and they've had some hideous playoff losses where their MVP strikes out more than I did in high school trying to date. And they don't score any runs, and they get swept, or they have their star closer giving up walk-off home runs to end series and things like that. Okay, I could understand the angst if the Astros, for the last 6 years, seemed like they were going to be the best team, but then in September and October, choked.
Oh, you mean if they were the Yankees?
If they were the Yankees, they choked. Okay, I would understand neurotic fans. They've been to four of the last six World Series and won two of them, including last year. Of every team in baseball, the one team in the American League that you could say fans should not be neurotic is the Houston Astros. They are the one. Now, let's switch gears here a little bit. Coming up next, was this audio approved by Mr. Editor, Sir Adam Schefter? Next, Killer Bees.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
That's great in for Joel and Jeremy on The Killer Bees alongside Joe George. They're on ESPN 97.5. It's fun to get to do. Man, I don't think I've ever... Joe, have we ever done a show together, just the two of us?
I was just thinking that. I don't think so.
Like, I don't know if we ever did one on the network.
I mean, if it was, that's, 2015, 2018, that time frame. That's because that's when I was at Gal before. I know I produced for you and Nate on 1560.
Yeah, see, I mean, you did, I know you did Nate and Crate. I'm just like, did you ever do one that's just the two of us?
I think this is a first.
I am admittedly getting older in years. And chances are, if it doesn't revolve around some kind of sports, I might not necessarily remember things that have happened in the last 7 years. I'm bad about that. So I apologize if we have done a show together before and I just don't recall.
It's okay. I keep telling people I was like, my first stint at Gal was only like 3 years ago. It was like 5 years ago.
Days seem like years.
My brain is mush since having a kid. So
how old is your son now?
JJ, he just turned 2 in March.
He's 2?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, except like last time he doesn't sleep. It's awesome.
You know what?
He woke up at like 3 in the morning and just wouldn't go back to bed. Not even crying. Just like 2 in the morning, wants to play for 2 hours.
Wait till they're 16 and they don't want to go to bed.
Yeah, that's true.
And they've got 3 homework assignments they haven't done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are a little different. But 2 is a fun age because they still have so much innocence and the world is still new.
Oh, it's the best.
And every time you take them somewhere, the eyes get big and Oh my gosh, this is amazing.
I can't wait. We're trying to figure out if we're going to take him to his first Astros game this year or not.
Have you been to the zoo?
Yes.
Have you been to the museum?
Yep.
Aquarium. The first time they see the dinosaur?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, we've done the aquarium, all the other fun stuff. Zoo lights. Zoo lights is great.
Zoo lights are fun.
Yeah.
When my kids were little, we were kind of in the middle of the mortgage crisis. I was out of work, and I was driving a limo to make cash because I needed to have some kind of income coming in. I couldn't get a job. Banks were going out of business faster than you could blink. There were no jobs. And even if you had a job, you weren't making any money because nobody was lending. So you could have had perfect credit, put down 50%, and the bank would still find a reason not to close your loan. I lived this. So I was driving for a limo company to make extra money, and they had a lot of business. So I took a lot of jobs. Around holiday time, I would go grab one of the limos, and because if you had the key code, you could go in and take whatever car you want because all the keys were in the car. So I'd go in with the key code, go get a car, take my kids around the different neighborhoods to go see all the holiday decorations that people would put up. And you know how, like, those big, like, inflatable things? My daughter couldn't say blow up, so she called them bups.
Nice.
So we had to go see the bups. And I'd just drive around and take them to see all the lights, and I'd stack the car with, like you know, sodas, like Sprite and Coke and stuff like that. And they thought this was the greatest thing ever. So last year, my son was a high school senior. He's in college this year. So not this past Christmas, but the one before that. He's 17. He says, "Hey, Dad, yeah, how come you don't, grab a limo and take us around to go, you know, see all the lights and maybe just drive us around the city and, you know, have the car stocked with drinks and stuff so we can, like, go hang out?" I'm like, because the world is different now, buddy. That's why.
Very different now.
I don't have access to all those limos anymore. But, like, I had a good enough relationship with the owners of that company that I could just take a car, and as long as I gassed it up before I brought it back, they didn't care because they trusted me. There were plenty of times we'd take the limos home to do an early airport run or a very early funeral that was far away or something like that. We'd just take the car home and then go in the morning. Yeah, it's a little different when you have no job and no money whatsoever, and you're basically scamming rides of people to, there's a little more security nowadays, and I don't have that relationship, and you're 17, you're too old to be driving around looking at bups.
Just tell him to get a limo. Go get a job.
He was still getting his license at that point. I actually purchased his car in January of last year. So he didn't even have a car yet. Something tells me that we are very happy about something that just happened on the television screen. Corey Jolks, home run.
Go Cougs.
Start him at first base, Joe.
I mean, I don't know, man. Maybe he's just your everyday left fielder now.
Corey Jolks with the home run. His first home run as a major leaguer. He had just missed one about a week ago. We hit it off the top of the Crawford boxes.
Yeah. And it looks like one of the 2,000 Pirates fans there was so kind to throw it back on the field for them.
That actually was very generous of them because now, you know, somebody can go retrieve that ball for him and he'll actually have his first home run ball. When it happens at home, you have to go find the person who has the ball. And then you go like, "All right, listen, I'll give you a bat and a jersey." And, you know, and then they're probably like, "Can I get something signed by Altuve?" You know, that was the big thing last year. "Can I get something signed by Verlander?" It's like, bruh, come on. How greedy you got to be? But I guess if you have the chance to cash in or cash out, you can take that chance to go grab that. So, Corey Jolks, home run, 2-0, good guys. In fact, every time the Astros score, we should play like the Rebel theme from Star Wars.
Ooh.
That the good guys score. And every time the other team scores, we should play now, the Empire theme because they're the bad guys.
Can I push back on that?
Why?
Because the Astros are the evil empire now.
No, that's the Yankees. They are officially the evil empire.
I think the Astros have overtaken the evil empire. Because like when people talk about Astros fans still getting booed and all these things, and you know, they're like, "Why are they still booing the Astros players for cheaters, being cheaters?" I don't think they're also booing them to be cheat because they were cheaters. I think they're booing them because they just kicked everyone's ass.
I think
they're the best team in baseball. They've been the best team in baseball for 6 years. They're one of the most dominant teams in the history of sports.
But if you think about it, the Rebels are actually kind of the ones who get booed because everywhere they go, they're either in danger from the Empire or they're in danger from, you know, Empire sympathizers or Empire-controlled planets. The Senate is completely controlled. You know, it's dissolved. So, but all the planets are basically under Imperial control. So the Rebels are always in danger and always frowned upon. So you could say that it is the Rebels who get booed.
All right. I like your reasoning here. I like where you're going with it. I think I would still call them the Evil Empire just because I like the idea of taking that from Yankees fans. Just another thing. You know, we take away Reggie Jackson. You take away 50 Cent. You take away the moniker of the Evil Empire. Like, you just take everything that they think that they know, winning.
Oh, see, I'm fine leaving them with the Evil Empire and just taking the winning.
Yeah, because they're nothing. They're just a nothing now. They have fake records.
They really are the Astros stepchild.
Oh,
they are
big
the Astros stepchild right now. They can't, it is in their heads since Dallas Keuchel shut them down in a wild card game way back in 2015. They have been in the Astros shadow going on 8 years. And every year, this is the year, this is the year. Remember last year, was it Aaron Boone saying we have to slay the dragon?
Yeah.
Well, the dragon incinerated you in the shortest amount of time possible.
It was so awesome. That series was great.
You were completely, basically, the Yankees were the Iron Throne, and the Astros were the dragon, and melted them to nothing. I thought it was pretty awesome. And I didn't get into all the gory details of, you know, the dragon basically, you know, incinerating an entire army on the beach, which was also really cool.
That did happen. It was pretty sick. Game of Thrones was such a good show. They butchered the end of that season so bad, though.
I don't even care they butchered the end because, really, if George R.R. Martin had just stopped being a lazy ass and written the damn ending.
I can't believe he still hasn't written the book yet.
The show ended like 4 years ago.
Yeah,
we're already getting a prequels. And he hasn't written the ending to the original.
There's going to be two more prequels starting before he writes the original ending.
So, yes, was the last season and a half basically the writers and producers winging it? Yes, it was. Was it as good as the first five seasons? No, it wasn't. Did you like the Battle of the Bastards? Yes, you did. You know, that iconic scene where Jon Snow is about to take on, like, an entire army, where Sansa sicks the dogs on her forced husband, and he gets eaten alive. Come on, everybody loved that scene.
So good. Battle of the Bastards is one of the greatest television episodes in the history of television.
You know, Arya taking down the Night King. Everybody loved that scene. So, yeah, was it done as great? No. But it's not like it was total hot dog poo. There were still epic scenes. So, I'm not on board with the, oh, we have to crush it. I enjoyed it. If you didn't enjoy it, that's your problem. I'm here for the entertainment purposes, which is why we're going to get into which exact person was the Mr. Editor, sir. You'll remember the leaked emails from Washington where Adam Schefter was telling their former president, Bruce Allen, hey, Mr. Editor, sir, can you verify this, everything that I wrote, and make sure it's up to your standards? Mr. Editor, sir, frickin' water carrier. Who's he carrying water for with this comment? Next.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the killer bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joel Blank is in Disney with the kids. God bless him. Taking the little kids to Disney is always amazing. Jeremy Branham is traveling to call Cougs baseball.
Voice of the Cougs.
Patrick Creighton and Joe George in on the Killer Bees. And, you know, I know we call draft season lion season. And the closer we get to the draft, the more the lion kind of overwhelms media reports and all that. And Everything is a smokescreen and last second trying to throw people off the scent and whatnot. But Adam Schefter, who as leaked emails show, is 100% not above carrying water for whatever team he's getting info from. He said something yesterday that certainly sounds like he is participating 100% willingly in lying season. Here is Adam Schefter.
There's a lot of conflicting signals and information out there about what Houston is going to do at two. And I think a lot of people have assumed it's just going to be a quarterback. And in the end, I'm just not convinced just yet that that's going to be the case. Now, I do think that we have Bryce Young slated to be the favorite, number one, Carolina. Then Houston's on the clock. And what does Houston do? And it becomes interesting if Houston decides to auction off that pick to somebody who wants to come up and trade for a quarterback at number two, or whether Houston wants to go with a quarterback of its own, or whether Houston wants to go with one of the top defensive players. All I'm saying is I don't think it's a lock that Houston is going quarterback at two. That's all I'm saying.
I'll take things that are complete bull for 500, Alex. The Texans are not going to take a quarterback at two because, well, they might take a defensive player. Or they might trade back. Or let me just throw out any other nonsensical but possible scenario. Just because it's possible doesn't mean it's sensical. But I'm going to throw it out there because clickety click clicks. Adam Schefter's lying his damn ass off, Joe.
The only thing that's tough is that so much of this is happening at one time. Like you have this report in quotes, because really he says nothing. You have this Michael Lombardi stuff that there could be a front office shakeup after the draft. For the Texans. He said that yesterday on VSiN.
They're a backhoe with the amount of BS that's getting pushed around here.
But you know what's funny though about that report? Like everyone's taking, I think, too literally. Like they're directing it like.
Well, they're going to get rid of a couple of scouts.
That's what I think it means. I know McClain put some stuff on social media, or maybe it was on Gallery Sports that he heard that the Casario could go back to the Patriots after the draft, but he didn't believe it. So like there's stuff out there. I'm pretty confident they're taking a quarterback. If they don't. I get it. I get why you don't take a quarterback.
Yeah, I don't. There is zero excuse to not take a quarterback.
I think if you believe that Bryce Young is the only franchise quarterback in this draft and he goes first overall and you don't believe in CJ Stroud, I don't think you should panic.
But see, I think that's a false narrative. Because we have heard the head coach himself say there are two quarterbacks at the very top of this draft. Head coach said that.
For sure.
So clearly they are not looking at it as, well, it's Bryce Young or it's the be-all, end-all. Because the reality is, if they thought it was Bryce Young or nothing, and Lovie Smith wanted to win the final week of the season, Lovie Smith would have been fired. And there's no way they would have allowed the team to win that game, final week of the season, if Bryce Young was the one and only player they thought was worthy of being their quarterback in the draft this year. The fact that they are, you know, we've heard the head coach say there's two quarterbacks. So that means no on Will Levis, Jeremy Branham. That means no on Anthony Richardson, who throwing the ball from me to Joe right now, it's 50-50. And he'll throw it 100 miles an hour, but is he going to hit Joe from where I'm sitting? 50-50.
Ryan Poles, the Bears GM, went on the record that there was discussions with the Texans about trading back from 1 to 2 and then making a deal with Carolina to go back to 9. And so if you did believe, if you're Nick Casario and you're the Texans organization, and you believed there was one franchise quarterback in this draft, then I think they would have been more aggressive trading up for the first pick. And that to me is another sign of where they do think there's two.
And who does it benefit for Ryan Poles to say, yes, we've talked to the Houston Texans? Who does it benefit?
Nobody.
It benefits the Bears.
Yeah.
It makes it, hey, you know what? There's another team involved that wants to get this pick. We better up the ante. And Carolina up the ante. And, hey, we talked to the Texans. They could have talked to the Texans about any random player at the back of the roster. They could have talked to the Texans because GMs talk to the GM of pretty much every team. Everybody's going to do their due diligence. Is it possible I could somehow step in it and get myself a really good deal that I shouldn't have been able to get? I'll make a phone call and find out. But the idea of that the Texans only think Bryce Young is the only guy who could be the quarterback, their actions say that that's not true.
I tend to agree. I mean, I am in the belief that if you don't 110% believe in C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young, whoever's there at two, that you should take Will Anderson. I don't think you should just take a quarterback to take a quarterback. It's better to wait if you don't believe in this guy, because not only is your job as Nick Cassero in the balance, D'Amico Ryan's job is also likely in the balance. Like, the idea that the Texans are going to take a quarterback at two and then D'Amico's going to get another rookie in 3 or 4 years, there's no chance. I don't care this contract is 6 years long. Like, this is one shot. And if you don't get it right, you're all out.
If it's not a quarterback at two, what's the plan? Because you know what? It's possible that the top four quarterbacks are gone by 12. It's possible.
110%. But like, if you think the Jets could go back in time and they could take, and the 49ers, if they could go back in time and not take Zach Wilson or Trey Lance and take an elite pass rusher like Will Anderson is, even though that doesn't solve the Jets quarterback problem, it would have been better in the long term.
And if you think about why did they take those players, they took those players knowing that they were going to be projects, thinking, well, their athleticism and they've got huge arms, that we can coach them up, we can develop them, we could make them stars if everything goes right. Things haven't gone right. They didn't take somebody who was a pure pocket passer, who is highly accurate, that every scout who watches their tapes tells you, this guy is legitimately the goods. That's C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, I'm definitely team C.J. Stroud.
C.J. Stroud had better college numbers than Trevor Lawrence by a decent amount.
Yeah, I think the Texans fans should be happy if Stroud's the guy, too. I know not everyone.
Throwing a damn party.
Not everyone will be, of course, but like, not everyone's going to be. You're not going to appease everyone. It doesn't matter what quarterback you take. You could take Anthony Richardson, and a lot of people would love it. And a lot of people, now more people would hate that. Same thing with Levis. But even if Stroud goes one and people and the Texans take Young, people are going to be upset with that too. Like, no one's going to love every single draft pick the Texans make. But yeah, I think this is all smoke. And part of it, I think, is just to tell the Panthers, stop trying to act like we're going to trade up with you. We're not.
You know, let's not forget, Texans, J.J. Watt got booed on draft day. And he only became, like, you know, one of the greatest defensive players of all time. How many AFC championship games did J.J. Watt get the Texans to? As great as he was. Great. Oh, J.J. Watt's got 20 sacks. J.J. Watt's 3-time defensive player of the year. J.J. Watt could not help them win a divisional playoff game. You need a quarterback. And you know what? The chances of you getting the number two pick again next year, probably not that great. So go get the quarterback. Pick the guy that is the best guy on the board, which is probably going to be C.J. Stroud, instead of, well, you know what? Maybe we could get one of these guys that we'd have to develop, who's going to be a bit of a project, who maybe isn't accurate or throws too many interceptions or is hurt and is going to miss the year. No, you take one of the two guys who are both bona fide number one pick type quarterbacks. You don't have to overthink it. It is that simple. Now, D'Amico Ryans talked to the media yesterday, but sometimes there's a difference between the exact words that get said and what you actually hear. What did you actually hear, Joe George? We'll get to that next. Before we hit the break, got to tell you about our friends at MyBookie. You know what? if you were watching the Masters last week and you sprinkled a little something on somebody, you probably had a lot more fun watching the Masters than you did if you didn't go to MyBookie. Well, you know what? Every game can be baseball, can be the NBA playoffs, can be the NHL. Everything, you're going to find it at MyBookie. You want to place a little wager on who's going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft? Who's going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft? You can find props like that and more all at MyBookie. All you got to do, go to MyBookie.ag. Make your first deposit and use promo code BET975. Get an exclusive deposit bonus up to $1,000. You want to play a little casino games? They've got live dealers right there online. Want to drop a little blackjack? You can do that at MyBookie. So bet on all the sports you love. Basketball, baseball, UFC, boxing. It's all there at MyBookie. Get your welcome bonus, your initial deposit, up to $1,000 with promo code BET975. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.